Translation. Thus travelling, I felt tired both bodily and mentally, and I was both thirsty and hungry. So I took a bath in a river, lake, and also drank water. By contacting water, I got relief from my exhaustion. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. A travelling mendicant can meet the needs of the body, namely thirst and hunger, by the gifts of nature without being a beggar at the doors of the householders. The mendicant, therefore, does not go to the house of a householder to beg to enlighten him spiritually. Om Gyananti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastachade Shatayane. So these last two chapters and this chapter are speaking of how the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. And previously the sages at Naimisharanya was asking Shukadeva Goswami, Suta Goswami, to narrate what he had heard from Shukadeva Goswami. And so this is the beginning where Suta Goswami, he starts to explain how the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Vyasadev. And Vyasadev, he could see the anomalies of the coming age, that people would be prayanalpayusasabhya, their duration of life would be very short, they would be lazy, unfortunate in spiritual life, and they would always be disturbed. And so therefore he started to compile the Vedic literatures and put them in various sections with all the literal paraphernalia so that people could take advantage. But after doing all that, he felt, dissatisfied. And so at that point, he understood actually why he was dissatisfied. He realized... But then Narada Muni came, and he started to encourage him, and he said, he confirmed his thoughts, and he said, "You haven't mentioned the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your literatures." He says, and then later on there's quite a few important verses we explain this point, that literature which doesn't glorify the Supreme Lord, it's just a complete waste of time. It's actually a place for materialistic persons. And... But literatures which do mention the Supreme Lord, even though it may be faulty, then that is actually accepted by honest people. I remember the first Bhagavatams I distributed in, I think it was 1984, 85. And, you'd show people a Bhagavatam and then you turn a few pages and they're writing the book upside down. So, what kind of books are these? And then, you turn a few more pages and, instead of being the fourth chapter, from the third, it would be the seventh. And so, but still, it's the essence that counts, the essence. And so, Vyasadeva missed the essence. The essence of life is to put Krishna in the equation. And then everything starts to actually make sense. Everything starts to work. So this is something Vyasadeva overlooked. And we can do that in life. We can deal with the details. What time is it? It's time I was doing this. We can run by the clock. And we can get into the nitty-gritty and then forget what we're doing even. So Prabhupada said, somehow or other, we should become Krishna conscious. And that's proving very true in this day and age, because we can't even, as this is talking about, Narada Muni, a sannyasi, he was travelling and preaching. It's very difficult to even maintain an ashram. But here's an indication of one of the mentalities of a travelling preacher. He should be, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, actually, he was giving class, and Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada was in the audience, and there was one life member started to speak to Prabhupada, and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur looked up and he said, "So, Mr. So-and-so, you think you can purchase me by your 100 rupee donation?" And so, you know, and then he turned to Prabhupada, he said, "And why don't you come up here and give the class?" So the first point is what we're really talking about, is that, you know, when we are in the congregation, working very hard, surrendering like anything, but still that contamination of thinking that we're maintaining can be there. In one respect, Krishna's giving us a facility to maintain, but at the end of the day, you know, the temple will maintain if Krishna wants. He wants the devotees who are engaged, the grihasthas, the sannyasis, the brahmacharis, and the vanaprasthas, to have a facility to become purified. So we should look on it that way, that, you know, we don't, you know, brahmacharis, they don't really need to be supported by the grihasthas in one sense. But for the purpose of purification, the brahmacharis should think that if it wasn't for the grihasthas, I wouldn't have a service. And the grihasthas should think that if it wasn't for the brahmacharis and the sannyasis, I couldn't actually get inspired at the temple like that. So this is what this particular verse is speaking about. Well, Prabhupada speaking, the verse tends to be speaking a little bit different about a travelling mendicant finding some, you know, relief from his travels. But as it says later in the Bhagavatam, the real relief is when we go back home, like a traveller. He's travelling all week, like Prabhupada used to do. He's undergoing so much distress, you know, having to make deals with business deals, travelling on trains, and, you know, having to take snacks instead of a proper meal. But at the end of the day, he remembers he's going home. So it says that, you know, devotional service should have that outlook, that if all these rules, regulations, following this, following that, it can be troublesome, but at the end of the day, we are going back to Godhead. anyway, coming back to the point, back to Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he had a mat, one particular temple he was at, in his, in the Gaudiya mat, and the brahmacharis and the residents were becoming a little bit anxious, because, you know, the boga, you know, the boga was gradually going down, and eventually it wasn't, you know, there was just like one day's supply left. And so they said to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, we should go out and collect so we can get boga. We should go out, collect boga. And Bhaktisiddhanta could understand that this is not the proper way to look at it. He says, right, for 1 week, nobody goes out of the temple. We just chant and hear about Krishna. Of course, everybody were like, whoa. And so they did. They stayed in the temple. And then there was a knock on the door. And the bag of rice. Another bit later. Some dal, a bit later. Back door. Then there was some... anyway, you understand the point that, you know, they got all the necessities supplied and they didn't even have to move. And actually Prabhupada said when he came to the West, if he could get one person who was serious and preach that person, that would be enough. You know, if he got 18 serious devotees, that was another way. In 18 days, he could make the world Krishna conscious. But because we're all in not at that level, then Prabhupada said I have to, you know, create so many services, big projects for my big men. Anyway, the essence is that we don't think we're doing anything. It's all Krishna's mercy. Krishna's engaging us according to our propensity. And if we start comparing different ashrams and comparing, you know, who's doing the most important service, then we tend to get caught up in a wrong mentality. Krishna's doing everything. And remembering that, there's one nice verse actually in the Bhagavad Gita. It explains how Chetasa Sarvakarmani Mai Sanyasya Matpara Buddhi Yogam Upashritya Matchita Satatam Bhava. And Krishna's explaining that he's talking about the essence of devotional service. The 18th chapter is the essence again. And this comes just after the verse 1855, which explains that devotional service is the essence. To render devotional service, we can understand Krishna. And he says the process is that in all activities, we should remember Krishna. Chetasa Sarvakarmani Mai Sanyasya Matpara. What's the rest of it? We should remember Krishna. We should be under Krishna's protection, and that Krishna's supporting it. I'll just read it actually. Has anybody got a Bhagavad Gita? Oh, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such activities, be fully conscious of me. And so, you know, that verse says everything. There's no doubt who's doing everything. And I'll just read the translation for everybody's benefit. Is that okay? Yeah. Oh, have you got it there? In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Purport. When one acts in Krishna consciousness, he does not act as the master of the world. Just like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. A servant has no individual independence. He acts only on the order of the master. A servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. He simply discharges his duty faithfully in terms of the order of the Lord. Now one may argue that Arjuna was acting under the personal direction of Krishna. But when Krishna is not present, how should one act? If one acts according to the direction of Krishna in this book as well as under the guidance of the representative of Krishna, then the results will be the same. The Sanskrit word matparaha is very important in this verse. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness, just to satisfy Krishna. And while working in that way, one should think of Krishna only. I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. While acting in such a way, one naturally has to think of Krishna. This is perfect Krishna consciousness. One should out... And then it says that we should... Whimsical activities are not on the same category. It has to be bona fide activity. You know, there's a pastime, I think it was Madhavacharya, he had two disciples. I can't remember their names, but they, you know, difference between Grihastha and Sannyasi or Brahmachari. And seeing like that, we may be seeing faulty. So Madhavacharya could see that his Brahmacharis and Sannyasis were becoming a little proud, because two of his disciples, they were very wealthy. I think everybody knows this story, but it does make a point. They were very, very wealthy, and they were thinking, why have they got so much wealth? The Guru Maharaj is always glorifying them. Why don't he glorify me? I'm the renunciant. And so he could understand that mentality. And so he said, you're right. you know, we should catch him out. So I'll go tonight when, you know, when the husband goes out and steal all the valuables in the house. And so when, so this is what the Brahmacharis did. They climbed through the window, through the door, and the Mataji was asleep. And they saw that, why don't we take the earrings? And so they took the earring and the bracelet off one side. And she understood these Brahmacharis and Sannyasis must be hungry. And so they need Lakshmi. And so she turned over so they could take the other bracelet and earring. And they got frightened. They thought she was waking up, and they ran. And they ran back to Madhavacharya and said, this will show them. See how they act now when they've lost all their wealth. And of course said, we should go back and see what happens when the husband comes back. And so they were looking through the window, and when the husband came back, can anybody remember the name? I can't remember his name. When the husband came back, he says, what happened? Where's your earrings and where's your bracelets? And, you know, where's the ornaments? He said, oh, well, and she told him the story. He says, why have you got earrings on one side and not on the other? He said, well, they took them off one side and then I turned over so they could get the other side. And he really chastised. He said, why didn't you turn over softly, quietly, so they could take the others? And when the Brahmacharis and Sannyasis heard that, their mouth dropped, you know. They could understand the lesson that Madhavacharya was actually teaching them. So actually, that's the fact. Prabhupada says that this movement, you know, is all sannyas. Mahaprabhura Bhakta Ganera Vairagya Pradhan Yahandeki Prithihana Gora Bhagavan. Lord Chaitanya says, renunciation is the quality that sustains the life of his devotees. And when Lord Chaitanya sees that we're renounced, he becomes extremely pleased. And so renunciation is an internal thing. You know, anasakta shivishayam yataram upayunjita nirbanda krishna sammande yukta vairagim uchite. Not external renunciation. So in other words, Prabhupada mentioned in Bhagavad Gita that in the early days, it's, you know, at the beginning of the 18th chapter talks about vairagya, renunciation, and sannyas. And so to emphasize this point that everybody can be renounced, Prabhupada said that his early disciples, they were going out to the Kodak factory and they were earning. And they were going out to the municipality offices and they were earning. And they were giving every penny to Prabhupada. He says, this is sannyas life. So, you know, actually, this movement is a movement of sannyasis, if we apply it. Nirmama, nothing for me, everything for Krishna. Just one more point on this particular verse about here, Narada Muni is, you know, he's described by Prabhupada that in that situation, he's enlightening people. He's not doing it so he can get Lakshmi. You know, if we go to a place because it's good picking and give a class, maybe that's not the proper mentality. But if we go to that place to give transcendental knowledge, then whatever we receive by the grace of Krishna, we feel satisfied in our ashram. You know, this is actually real sannyas, that Krishna is going to look after me. Avayam sattva samsiddhi. Fearless in every situation that Krishna will take care. And also fearless in preaching. And at that time, in the Vedic age, you know, not the Vedic age, but beyond 200 years ago, even now in India still to some point, before the Industrial Revolution in particular, the sannyasi would, the Vaishnava sannyasi anyway, would travel from door to door, and he'd go from village to village, spend no more than 3 days there. Why? To give Krishna consciousness. Then if he would receive some alms and to nourish himself. But can we do that now? We've got an International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And at that time, you know, the sannyasi didn't have to, he didn't have to bow down to anybody in one respect. Obviously, he always bowed down to the super soul within the heart of everybody, but he doesn't have to follow anybody's guidance. He's independent. Brahma means independent. He can say what he wants for the benefit of people because he's not a bought man. But in a society of devotees, how will that work? We have temples and, we have travelling sannyasis. It's not just like he's travelling to a little Namhata or a family or something like that. Where the culture is, they know we have to support the sannyasis because that's good for us. Initially, we think it's good for us because we get some pious benefit. But it's good for us because we get some transcendental knowledge. And so that's not the culture all over the world. Maybe the culture in certain parts of India. And we have temples where that's not, there's so many preachers going to temples, so it's a little bit different. But still it's the same. The travelling preacher should be able to preach and explain the situation, explain from Shastra the tattva, without any difficulty. And so in ISKCON we have what they call the parallel lines of authority, don't we? So that means we've got the temple authorities, who are also seen as spiritual authorities. Of course, when we say spiritual authority, you can't be touched with a wand and you're a spiritual authority, you know what I mean? It's by action. But definitely managerial authority and spiritual authority also should be there, because that's the root cause of a good managerial authority in devotional service. And then, so they generally, as the system stands now, we have many disciples are taken from one particular guru, and so the guru is travelling, and so these disciples don't get that association personally so much. Obviously, we have the internet. We have, we can listen through, Mayapur TV, and what they call these little devices, iPods. We can listen to some, but still, that's only one side of the association. The Vapu and Vani, and although we emphasize Vani, Vapu is very important also. It's very important for our, we see the philosophy in action. So the disciples have to take shelter at the local temple, and the way the GBC tell us is that the way the paper's worded, very much emphasis is to the travelling preacher supporting the temple, because the temple is actually looking after his disciple. And of course, he has to have discrimination to make sure that that's actually happening. So this is where there can be a little bit of maybe a difference of opinion. And so this is what we have to negotiate in ISKCON. That, and the answer is that everybody's trained up properly in the philosophy. If everybody's trained properly in the philosophy and everybody's, we have the mood of looking after the devotees, because actually the devotees are the project, then everything will grow nicely. Otherwise, if we put the project first, then things will not grow nicely. And later on I read about the sannyasi in the seventh chapter. It talks about 7:14, I think it is. Talks about the perfect person. And it was where Parikshit Maharaj, he was analysing this person who was laid down on the ground like a python. And he could see, due to his advanced spiritual development himself, that this person's also spiritually advanced. Why is he lying down like that? And I recognise him, actually. I've seen this person before somewhere. And so he asked him questions, about his renunciation, and the renunciant started to give a reply. And in one of those replies, me find it. In one of those replies, he was saying that we're talking about the temples, right? Is everybody still with me? I'm getting a bit distracted here. We're talking about the temples, and he was saying that actually, a renunciant, or we don't really need a temple to practice devotional service. He says, but if a temple comes along by its own volition, then we can use it. And that temple, and he also equates it to a monastery. Monastery. So, the temple and the monastery, Prabhupada's saying that he's using the same definition. And the definition Prabhupada gives in his purport is that we can use these temples for people who are really serious in Krishna consciousness. Nobody else should live there unless they're very serious in Krishna consciousness. And I was thinking about that the temples are actually educational establishments. And when we keep a good educational establishment, the body of devotees in society become well situated due to education. And then the movement actually flourishes. But if we use them for anything else, and we don't emphasize that, then, the whole structure suffers. Okay, so I just thought to mention that. This is what Prabhupada was saying, that, everybody can practice Krishna consciousness in their own situation. Namhattas, groups of devotees, hiring a hall. But specifically, we have to have a class of devotees who can teach society, teach the congregation the proper principles of devotional service, the proper philosophy. Well, time's going on now. Today is also Rupa Goswami's appearance day. Right? Eh? Oh, disappearance. Sorry. This is disappearance day. So we'll just say a little bit about Rupa Goswami. He was brother of Sanatan Goswami, and he says that all devotees are actually they're expert in everything they do. They were so expert, Sanatan and Rupa, that they worked for the Haribol. They worked for the Nawab Hussain Shah, who was in the leader of Bengal, the Muslim ruler. And eventually they both escaped from that. They saw Lord Chaitanya and he told them to go back and wait their time and then eventually leave that post when an opportune moment came. And Rupa Goswami was the first one to leave, and when he left, he gave a very nice instruction about the about how we should use our wealth. And he said that 50% of wealth should be used for giving to a Brahmin, or in this case, the Vaishnavas, for preaching Krishna consciousness. 25% should be given to family members to make sure that they are looked after. And 25% for emergencies for the individual. So this is really important that, tendency is that in the past in ISKCON, we've started practicing Krishna consciousness, and it's bye-bye to everybody, But no, we're responsible. We've performed our duties, and we have to make sure that we fulfill our duties. Otherwise, what kind of people are we? That's one thing. The other thing is wealth should be given for preaching Krishna consciousness. That's the purpose of this movement. The purpose of this movement is to develop Krishna consciousness within ourselves due to education, and then give Krishna consciousness to society. So Rupa Goswami was the perfect example of this. He kept it for himself, but actually he knew where it was going to go. He gave it to Sanatan Goswami so he could actually get himself out of prison. And so the principle is we don't have more than what we need to actually practice Krishna consciousness. And actually if we become serious in practicing the process of Krishna consciousness, this is not necessarily so difficult. The more we become serious, the more we realize that Krishna's providing. Krishna's providing everything we need. Why should I actually be worried about that? Anyway, there are certain principles in a Grihastha ashram which Grihasthas can explain more about how to manipulate wealth, how to keep some savings for a rainy day and like that. Rupa Goswami, he was also called Rasacharya. Rasacharya. And Rasacharya, Sanatana Goswami actually was the elder, and Rupa Goswami saw Sanatana Goswami as his senior. You know, Sanatana Goswami was well read in Srimad Bhagavatam. He was the, you know, best person to approach for education. And he wrote many books on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Rupa Goswami was the youngest, but we all known as Rupanugas, that we follow in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. So, you know, I was asked this question by Sutapa many years ago about why don't we approach Sanatana Goswami if Rupa Goswami is approaching Sanatana Goswami? And so the answer is that Rasacharya, it means that he understands the essence of Lord Chaitanya's preachings, teachings. And he understands the mood of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya understood this, that this person understands my real mood. Once when he was at Rath Yatra, he was chanting one verse in glorification of Srimati Radharani and the gopis. And, you know, I don't know what the rest of the chanters thought when he was chanting this verse, because he was a sannyasi. And he was chanting a verse about relationship between man and woman. And nobody could understand. And then later, Sanatana Goswami, he was in his thatched cottage, and he was writing. And he was writing the sequel to this particular verse. And when he'd finished, he put it in the roof of his thatched cottage. And then he went to take bath in the river. And while he was away, Lord Chaitanya came with some of his associates, and he saw this, this palm leaf, this written palm leaf, and he took it out and he read, and you know, he became ecstatic. He said, "How does, you know, Rupa Goswami know my mind? Nobody else could understand." And I think it was Sarut Damodar says, "Because he's been blessed by you. You blessed him, and so he can understand." And so, in that way, because he understood Lord Chaitanya, his you know, mood, we're called Rupanugas. And so this is the aim of life, is to become blessed by our authorities. You know, Lord Chaitanya blessed Rupa Goswami. By the blessings of the authorities, then we can also understand the mood of devotional service. Remember we were saying about Vapu and Vani. Actually, from Vani, if we understand Prabhupada's books nicely, we can also understand the mood of Prabhupada. But we usually need, you know, help from another devotee who's more qualified than we are. This is where Vapu comes in. And so so Rupa Goswami set that precedent. And then, actually Rupa Goswami and I think it was Sanatana Goswami, they were approaching Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya was speaking, one particular pastime, was speaking to Vallabhacharya. And Vallabhacharya was an advanced devotee. How did he get Lord Chaitanya's association otherwise? And they were speaking on devotional service. And when, because Vallabhacharya told them to come, actually. And when they came, they paid obeisances from a distance and they wouldn't come near Lord Chaitanya. And they were saying, "Oh, we're too fallen." And they were, you know, lamenting. And Lord Chaitanya was really happy about this. And Vallabhacharya couldn't understand at that time. He says, "And you know, they're saying they're fallen. They're not fallen. Why are you happy that they're saying they're fallen?" And so this is the mood of Rupa Goswami. That we, you know, Jivarasvarabhaya Krishna Nichidas. That we're eternal servants of Krishna. And we're servants of the followers of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so this is the mood that Rupa Goswami gave us. And today we have time to, if we have time to read up on Rupa Goswami and his particular mood of devotional service, that will be very helpful for our development. Okay, it's 20 to now. I said we'd finish at 9:45. Has anybody got any questions or comments?
Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas to avoid the criticism of students and to attract the attention of others in society that wouldn't be interested otherwise. But then when he had the responsibility for restoring Krishna consciousness, Rupa and Sanatan went to one place and they pretty much stayed in one place and didn't take sannyas. I've always been interested in the contrast between that. Because we say that the movement was spread by Lord Chaitanya traveling and preaching as a mendicant. But then we look at the example of Rupa Goswami, and they traveled from tree to tree, but it was pretty much in the Braj region, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I just wondered if you have any thoughts about the contrast between the different lifestyles that were there.
Well, my experience is that, you know, everybody's different. Everybody's got a different nature, and we also have to be engaged according to our nature. I heard one senior devotee, Sanyasa, saying that you should stay in one place and should develop that area, develop the devotees, which is fine. And another one who I asked, he said, yeah, that's all right. He says, but I've tried it, and I'm not so good at it. So I travel and preach, and I find that, you know, I enliven people wherever I go. Well, he didn't say that, but, you know, he does. I know. And so we have to see the nature of the... We're not all like robots. We have to see what our nature is and engage ourselves or be engaged by others according to that nature. Otherwise, we won't be able to maintain it. And some people may need a bit of both. But the idea of developing an area is very good if we can do it. But also, you know, a sannyasi should travel because it's good for his spiritual life as well. Not to be in one place all the time and, you know, politics and, you know, pressure, different pressures from different sides. When you travel, it's like a release from that and you can actually function. You know what I mean? So we have to look after the sannyasis as well. And anyway, the thing is, as this movement grows, my understanding is that there'll be plenty of educated and advanced devotees in family life as well. And a lot of the preaching will be done by them. I used to go door to door as a brahmachari and distribute books, and sometimes I get invited in, and at this place I got invited in once, and then no one ever invited me again. And I thought I was doing okay. I mean, I agree, Esther, but at some point I saw him look at me, I thought, and he was looking at me and say, I can't live like him. I was speaking the philosophy of how a Grihastha should live as much as I could understand, but he didn't have a role model. And I realised that this door-to-door should be done by Grihasthas. If they go door-to-door, his friends, you know, the wife makes friends with the other wife, you know, it's like, that's what usually happens, isn't it? The women make friends, and then it's solid. Then you've got friendship, and then development. And, you know, you're showing by your practical example how to practice Krishna consciousness, or how to develop it. You know, the sannyasis and brahmacharis may be more like teaching the congregation. Anyway, these are just some thoughts. I've just kind of splayed out from the... What's your thoughts?
Oh,
Anybody else? Can I explain?
Give more details about Rasa Acharya. When you said that he was Rasa Acharya because he could understand the essence and the mood of Radha and Krishna.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact verse.
It was about Rupa Goswami. You said that this movement is for develop and give Krishna consciousness at the society. More we become serious, more we realize that Krishna pourvoir, bring all we need for our service.
I can't understand very well.
Sorry.
It's the accent.
Very French. You said that when we have faith and we are serious,
we have faith,
we see that Krishna pourvoir, bring what we need.
Krishna brings what we need.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Rupa Goswami is very dear to Radha and Krishna because he know them very well. He was. Can you explain more about that? Like in the song Rupa Manjari Pada, we should put him in our heart, like a moon.
Yeah. Well, Rupa Goswami is a Manjari. He's an eternal servant of Radha and Krishna. And in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, he takes on a different form, that's all, but the mood's still the same. And the Manjari is the mood of this movement. It means that we don't, it's like we just want to satisfy Radha and Krishna, that's all. And so this is the, you know, the Manjaris don't engage in any relationship with Krishna, only serving those who do. Anyway, this is a deep subject and I'm not qualified to really speak so much, but maybe it's something we can be discussed after.
Shri
Prabhupada ki jai, Granth Sarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.